Hey, it's Brittany. I have two free resources and I want to put them in your hands right now. The first is my boundaries guide for when you know you need to set or update your limits with your mother, but you're not sure where to start. It walks you through exactly that. It's going to teach you how to create boundaries based off what you need, and that way, every boundary you set feels really good for you. The second is my Inner Child Healing Challenge, a 5-day email series for when you're ready to look at the little girl inside of you who needed something that she never received. She's still waiting. This challenge is a way for you to show up for her. Both are free, both are immediately useful, and both are waiting for you at brittanymscott.com. I'll say that one more time. Head over to my website at brittanymscott.com and grab these two free resources. Go get them and then come back and let's keep listening. Hey, it's Brittany, host of the Mother-Daughter Relationship Show podcast. On the podcast today, I have Dr. Cecily Moore. She's a mother, wife, counselor, educator, entrepreneur, and self-proclaimed recovering strong Black woman. I have the honor today of interviewing her and bringing her on the show. She went from being frustrated, burnt out, emotionally exhausted, and had to start digging for answers to understand what was happening and what she was feeling, and learn that part of what she was carrying was the strong Black woman narrative trope. So today I get to bring you along and talking about that and understanding what it means and how you can maybe move forward from it. So without further ado, we are going to jump into the episode, bring in Dr. Cecily, and I hope you enjoy the show today. Welcome to the Mother-Daughter Relationship Show, the podcast for mothers and daughters who want to build stronger bonds, deepen their understanding, and transform their relationships. I'm your host, Brittany Scott, licensed therapist and mother-daughter relationship coach. After years of working with hundreds of daughters and mothers, I've developed strategies that help break generational patterns, heal wounds, and create the loving relationships you've always wanted. Each week, I'll be sharing insights from real clients, expert interviews, and practical tools you can use immediately to improve your mother-daughter dynamic. Whether you're struggling with communication breakdowns, navigating major life transitions, or simply want to take your already good relationship to the next level, the show is for you. And yes, the transformation I guide my clients through can be yours too. I'll share more about how you can work with me. It's time to experience the relationship you both deserve. Are you ready? Let's dive in. And welcome back to the show. Today we have Dr. Cecily Moore joining me, and I'm so excited to have her here. So please tell the people who you are.
Yeah, I'm Dr. Moore, a licensed therapist in the state of Tennessee in Florida. And I do some one-to-one coaching, but all of my research and clinical interests lie around unlearning the strong Black woman narrative. And that comes from both lived experience, what I was seeing in my clinical practice, but also my dissertation research. So that is the thing. That is all of the things. How do we help Black women unlearn the strong Black woman narrative?
Yeah. So tell me about some of your research, because now I'm intrigued. What did you learn?
So I'm also a clinical faculty member, and I got my PhD in 2023. We're a military family, and so when we moved to Florida, it wasn't very long from that time that we became pregnant, and I was terrified because within my first pregnancy, I had postpartum depression. And I was like, oh, goodness, we can't even go down this route again. I'm here in this state alone. And so I started my dissertation research looking at the Black mortality rates in maternal mental health. But what I kept seeing and thinking about from my own lived experience was really how going through my own experience with postpartum depression, people kept telling me that postpartum depression was like a rite of passage and that I was strong and that I could push through it. And so as I was doing the research, this strong Black woman narrative, the mammy stereotype, those types of things kept coming up. And so I realized that I needed to go all the way back to understand what was happening in my present day life, and became obsessed with all things Black superwoman, strong Black woman narrative, Superella complex, mammy stereotype. And so that became my dissertation research. And really what I wanted to know was, how have Black women went about unlearning this process, the stereotype, for themselves? And so I interviewed about 20 Black women and asked the question, how did you redefine Black womanhood and how did you unlearn this narrative? And so, yeah.
I did not have postpartum depression, but I had depression probably pretty severely while I was pregnant.
Yeah, most definitely. I had it leading up to, while, and after. And that's actually why this work is so important, because during that time, I realized my mom and my grandmother couldn't give me what they didn't have. And so the narratives for them was, you have to push through, you have to be strong, this is just what you do when you become a mom. And I was like, this is unsustainable. And because I'm a therapist, everybody was like, do the thing. Therapize yourself. And I was like, that's not how that works at all. And so it started clicking for me as I was sitting up reading research articles. I was like, oh, this narrative is passed down through your maternal lineage.
Right. And mother wounds are born.
Mother wounds. Right. Yes.
Created. Maybe born is not the right word, but we create a pattern where we're teaching our daughters to be strong while providing no support.
Yes.
And then suffering in silence and then not knowing how to provide support because we didn't receive it. And the cycle just keeps continuing.
Yeah. As I continue to go down the rabbit hole, like reading the research articles and thinking about what had been lived out and embodied in my own experience, and then asking other people around me, like, what was their experience? It became more and more apparent that healing needed to happen. I personally believe that unlearning the strong Black woman narrative is one of the best mental health interventions out there for Black women, because it's so ingrained in our culture. Like, we are conditioned from birth to kind of carry this strength. And as you were saying, like, suppressing your emotions. And if that's what you've done and that's the knowledge that you have, that is the thing that you pass down to your offspring. And so I just didn't want to repeat the cycle with my daughter. And I knew that the information and the support that was being given to me, like, was not sufficient. And I was really, really, like, worried about my own, like, mental health and well-being, and knew that I needed to, like, find an answer for the information that I was seeking, because I wasn't going to get it from my mom and my grandmother.
So you speak to unlearning the superwoman trope, basically. We also used Superella earlier.
Sisterella.
Okay. I was like, I hadn't actually heard that one before, but what does that process look like? How do we break out of this trope or this narrative that is one placed on us by our mothers and our grandmothers, but was basically placed on them by society and what was happening around them? I think we have a choice now, whereas depending on what generation we're talking about, they didn't have a choice. So then how do we unlearn that and stop passing it down?
Absolutely. I think that language matters too. And so what you just said struck a chord for me, because as I was doing this research, as I was thinking about my lived experience, what I realized is like my grandmother very well probably needed this type of strength to survive. My mom didn't need the same version of strength that she needed, and I don't need the same version of strength that my mom needs, right? And so I began to think about the word reappropriation because I didn't want to just not honor the people who had gone before me and what they had suffered through. And so I began to think, I still need strength, but it's not strength in the way that you needed it or the way that you understood it. That was a thing with my research participants. Well, my grandmother actually probably had to be silent and suppress her emotions for certain reasons, but that's not my lived experience. And so the thing that came up the most with all the participants was letting go of the indoctrination and like the belief that you have to be strong in the same way. Most people say that they come to a catalyst moment, meaning they're at a crossroad and they recognize like what I am doing, what I'm being taught no longer fits or is no longer sustainable. So it's letting go of the indoctrination, coming to a catalyst moment, engaging in like self-discovery and self-exploration. That usually precedes some type of self-investment, whether it's therapy or like some type of healing modality. One of the other things that came up was like reading was very accessible. So like people would have the catalyst moment, then start to read, and that would kick off the unlearning process where they then were able to engage in that self-discovery, self-exploration, and self-investment. But then they had to move to a place of learning, boundary setting, balance. The two places that people told me were the hardest places to unlearn this narrative was in their familial and intimate relationships and in their work relationships. So I gathered familial and intimate together and then work separately. So that unlearning process, people would say, I think it feels safer to unlearn this narrative in my work role because there's a sense of loyalty to family or partner. And so as they're unlearning, they're trying to navigate familial and societal expectations while also learning to ask for help and setting boundaries. All of those things outline the process, if you will, of like how they go about unlearning the concept.
I have a few questions, but that asking for help piece, why is that so hard? And then don't let me have to ask twice. I'm probably not going to ask twice.
Not going to ask twice. And just about everybody that I talk to, over half of the participants, and I can see this in myself, said in some way, shape, form, or fashion that I'm the dependable one in my family. I'm the eldest daughter. I'm the breadwinner. I'm the strong one, right? And so when I ask for help, there's no one that has capacity. I know that I'm setting myself up for disappointment. I'm essentially parenting my parents at this point. And so asking for help was one of the harder things for people to grow into. Then we start talking about like learning self-trust because there very well may be some disappointment in asking for help. But then when we talk about going from strong Black woman to well Black woman, we talk about being a well-resourced Black woman. And so maybe it's not a family member that has the capacity or the emotional intelligence to provide the type of support that you need, but how can we resource ourselves to get that type of support? And that goes back to the self-investment piece.
Going from strong Black woman to well Black woman. I really like that.
Yeah.
I think one of the hard parts about where our society is right now is that our communities feel like they're all paid. our childcare paid, help with, I don't know, anything else, anything, we're paying for it.
Completely agree with that. It's something that I've thought about and don't really have a good answer to. Knowing that, especially for me and my own lived experience, I need to be a well-resourced Black. And so what does that mean? One, it means healing is probably expensive. It's coming at a cost. Finding somebody to watch these kids so that I can have some time off. Everything comes with a cost. To that point, what I have also realized in my own experience being a military spouse, when that man is gone and I come back home to my family, his family, most of the people are sick. And so it has been an interesting phenomenon for me, being the eldest daughter, moving back home, seeing how the strong Black woman narrative has manifested, not just in my mom's life, but in his mom's life. His mom is a caretaker. My mom is becoming a caretaker for her mom. And so, yes, I'm hyper aware that everything feels pay. And it's really, really hard to look at my immediate support system, my village, and even my childhood friends, like they have gone through things, right? And see that people truly don't have the bandwidth. They don't have the capacity. And so what then becomes the answer? I think in my circle of influence, if you will, like I talk to my friends about like therapy and like taking time and doing things for themselves because I want them to be well. And so in my head, it's like, well, we wouldn't all have to keep paying for support if we changed our conversation and we changed how we thought about our lived experience. And so my best friends, my mom, they will tell you all the time, Cecily is going to talk about what are we doing to be well. And part of that is selfish. I want my mom and my dad to be around for my children, but also having lived away for 7 or 8 years and then coming back and seeing the physical decline of people that I love and care about has been really, really sobering for me. And so sometimes that cost is not just selfish. It's, I know my mom does not have the capacity to come over here and get these kids and keep them all weekend like my grandmother used to do. Like, that is not the day and age that we live in. My grandmother pretty much raised me and my sister while my mom was out working, getting a PhD, all the things, right? My mom is still working. And so as much as I work, when I need her to watch the kids, I'm like, hey, can you check your calendar?
Yeah. My mom still works too. And I'm also a military spouse and we don't live near family. I'm states away. So most of my being well resourced for me becomes very expensive. But even if we lived at home, I would absolutely like have more help. But yeah, my mom still works. I just don't think we live in, the economy does not allow our parents to support us in the way that our grandparents were able to support our parents. It's not sustainable anymore. But you said something earlier that I want to come back to. You said the two hardest areas in your research that you found were dropping the strong Black woman narrative in familial relationships and work relationships. And that tells me what's left is friendships. Was it friendships that was the easiest to drop?
Well, the two hardest places to drop were intimate relationships and familial relationships. I lumped that into one, and then work relationships. I wouldn't necessarily say it's easier to drop in friendships. What we found around friendships is that it becomes almost a communicative style. Like it is kind of the language of Black women. Like, this is my strong friend. She's going to hold me down. And so I saw between participants where people kind of took turns, but more often than not, there was a designated strong prayer.
And so it's the lesser of the other evils, if you will.
Got it.
Because there's more of an understanding of what the role is and what is happening.
Exactly.
Whereas inside of familial and intimate partner relationships, they may not fully understand what you're holding, but that girlfriend does. Okay, so then how do we support women in intimate relationships that are holding on to this narrative that, you know, they have to be strong and they have to hold everything and they have to be emotionally well and they have to maybe suppress things and just get through it and just keep going?
Yeah, I think it's really about self-awareness and safety, because what I continue to see is that a lot of people have not just internalized it, but they've intellectualized it. And there's this sense of indoctrination and loyalty that they have to grapple with and work through. And so this is actually more of a recovery process because of those familial expectations and societal expectations. Every day, you are going to step outside of your home and be triggered. You're going to step outside of your bedroom and your partner may trigger you and try to reinforce that narrative, if you will. And so it starts with self-awareness. And what safety looks like to be able to get to that point is like inviting people in to have a truth-telling conversation with themselves first. Because again, the girlfriend might understand it, but there may be a sense of shame because we internalize and suppress our emotions. And so we have to, I call it seed planting, right? When you notice a thing, someone may not be ready to face it, but you plant that seed and you offer the invitation. I'm a firm believer, especially as a therapist, the only real way to like help change is like be a demonstration. It does not work to drag people along with you. And so how I like to like talk to clients about what this looks like is when you start seeing the change in me and start asking questions, then I'm able to plant that seed non-judgmentally. And so then you start to have some internal dialogue. You start to become curious. But also when you're healing, it shows you the unhealed parts of the people that you're closest to. And so you also have a responsibility to emotional intelligence and capacity and like how you say the things and how you invite people in and how you call people in. This isn't about shaming somebody because it's recovery. They might be gung-ho today and tomorrow be triggered. And so we want to continually make sure we're thinking about our language, like how we're saying and talking about the thing, but also offering up an invitation. I joke all the time and say like my mom has been my best client because I saw this phenomenon in me, realized it was passed down, and realized just because I wanted her to change, like it wasn't enough. She was going to have to get sick and tired of being sick and tired. And so every time she talked to me, it was an invitation. My language was about, this is what we're doing. This is what I'm doing. This is the benefit of that. I would love for you to come along. This is how I think it could help. And so you just open it up so that people can make decisions for themselves, but also like be that demonstration. I believe counseling is the gift that keeps on giving. The more you heal, and maybe it's not counseling, but the more you heal, the people around you will be affected.
I have two questions, but first I want you, before I go to the next one, because I think it's going to kind of drive the next part of our conversation, but you brought up shame. When somebody is feeling shame around this narrative that they're holding and then the behaviors that it's creating in them, what does that actually look like? How can somebody recognize that maybe what they're feeling or holding onto is shame?
Oftentimes how I've experienced is like people start shutting down and like start avoiding the conversation. And so that's why I always talk about lovingly inviting someone, calling them in, and being mindful of our language and our words, not like blaming the person for this is what's happening. And so how I like to frame it for people is being a strong Black woman was never yours to carry. This was created in slavery. And so this trauma has been given to us by someone else and then passed down as generational trauma. It takes the blame away from, like, you should know better, you're a failure, like all of those things. And people are able to, sometimes knowingly, sometimes unknowingly, start to think about the systems at play that create what they're experiencing. And so we try our best to like use non-judgmental, non-shaming language so that people can kind of like separate the feeling of shame from, oh, I have something to be shameful for.
Okay, so it's more in how we, like how we talk to each other and how we talk about the thing, that this is not something one of us just decided. It's just something that has been taught and passed down. To that, you talked about your mom being your best client. One thing that I talk about and I've said online many times, I probably have said here on the podcast, but when we're being cycle breakers, when we're the generational change inside of our families, we're not changing our parents. We're changing ourselves for the next generation to have a different experience. I've come across a lot of women who are taking on the task of, I'm breaking generational cycles and I'm trying to get my parents on board. I'm like, that's the quickest way to burn out. But then you say your mom has been your best client. So I want to know that experience, because oftentimes getting the women that come before us to change is very difficult. One, because of the generation that they grew up in, what was happening in society for them. Two, sometimes age. Once you get to a certain age, you don't care to change. This has been your life. This has been who you are. Change what and for who and for why, they really don't care. So please tell me your experience of holding yourself accountable, gently calling your mom in, and then leaving space for her to fill in the gap without it frustrating you.
Yes, and this has been such a delicate process. And also, for those people out there listening, I'm a therapist, so my mom was not really my client.
Right, of course.
It's definitely something that I joke about. But what I've seen play out, right, it goes back to me trying to heal so that I can be a better mother for my daughter. And so setting those boundaries and being accountable to what those boundaries are. And then she gets to make a decision about how she is going to show up in our lives. But I am responsible for my child. And here's what we're doing and here's what we're not doing. Now you get to make a choice. Not going to force a choice on you. But here are the non-negotiables, right? And then even just in language, one of the things that I will say that I continue to like see with my mom that has been both like hurtful to watch and a blessing to watch goes back to that work relationship. My mom has been in higher ed, been a career services person, so has very, in my opinion, colonized ideals about professionalism and the like, right? And so my best way to demonstrate change for her is to be the change that I wanted to see. And so how I've addressed and changed my relationship to work has made her curious. And so she then starts to ask questions, right? She then starts to be like, well, how are you doing this? And then I need to invite her in to my world and what we are doing. And so I tell people all the time, you have to kind of become the brand ambassador for your own healing. And when people start to see you physically, mentally, and emotionally change, whether it's with goodwill or not, they're still going to be curious and ask questions. And so when she becomes curious and she asks questions, I take liberties to say, this is what I experience, or this is how I experienced you as a strong Black woman. And this is something that I don't want to replicate. And so my mom says all the time, it's been interesting to watch how me and my sister navigate the world versus how she navigates the world. Because what she intended and who she intended for us to be was not on her bingo card. But we're, in a lot of ways, like living these kind of radical lives according to like how she grew up. And so she's constantly curious and questioning. And we have to constantly hold those boundaries, but then invite her into the conversation. Well, what would it look like for you if you didn't work 24/7 and you were not being exploited by Chad and Nia? Can you begin to see something different for your lived experience?
So I want to throw out there, just from my years of work, you sound like you have a mom who is self-aware to a degree.
I have a mom who is very intellectually smart. I have a mom who has a lot of trauma, or had a lot of trauma growing up. And the layers and the extent to her trauma continue to be revealed to us daily. I wouldn't necessarily say that it's all self-awareness, because there are definitely still some blind spots. What I will say, again, going back to like joking about her being my client. So she will go back to her home girls and talk about these radical kids that she got,
right?
But they have a poor resource network because they're all experiencing the symptoms of the strong Black woman. But it must be something too we're doing, because we're not having the same conversations that they're having. And so it's less about me pulling her alone. She gets into her groups with her homegirls and her friends, and they're having these conversations. And so the change starts to happen, not directly by anything that I've done, but like me and such were talking, and, you know, I told them such and such, you said, or you have the audacity to ask me such and such. But then everybody starts this open dialogue. And so that's why I call it seed planting. Know exactly what I want you to do and how I want you to feel, but you can't hear it from me. But if I plant a seed and you take it to Cheryl and Hattie and whoever else is in your group, maybe between the four or five of y'all, somebody can make it make sense.
Okay. Right. Okay. I'm following. So what your mom has is a healthy network of other women. So healing for her can happen in a community of her peers. You're planting the seeds. And so what you're doing with the knowledge and the education and the emotional intelligence that you have is you're planting ideas in her head of, well, what if, ... And then you back off. She takes that seed. And then she goes to her community. And by her community, I mean her group, her circle of friends that she trusts. And from there, this idea takes off. And what that seed blooms into, you have no idea what's going to happen. Okay? It could be a cactus to where this is super thorny. They don't want to touch it, but some idea bloomed. Or maybe it's a flower and it is beautiful. And they're asking, wait, maybe our daughters are onto something.
Most often, it's a cactus before it blooms, because it's triggering those unhealed parts of like her friend group, right?
And so there's resistance.
Definitely resistance. But coming from me, she wouldn't be able to hear it. It would sound like a personal attack. How dare you? You might honor, not a sacrifice. All it is for you. No way. That message would never land.
Right.
They wrestle with what's been planted. It starts out rocky. It starts out rough. Sometimes she'll come back and be like, yeah, we were talking about that. And I'll be thinking to myself, that don't even make no sense, but I'm going to let you have it because I released
it.
Here's my boundary. Here's what I'm going to do. Right. But it's just like most things related to this. So one of the reasons that I say like work is one of the harder places for people to unlearn this narrative because it works until it doesn't. What has helped you become a great employee, climb the corporate ladder, that grit, that go to harnessing that trauma, becoming the one who rises out of the ashes and the first of many for different aspects of your life in your familial lineage? Like that's where you kind of learn like validation. And so getting achievements and accolades, like work becomes a lot of times like the escape, right? It's a place that I'm seeing all of the things, right? But it's silently killing you because you're overworking. Like there's no balance in the way that you're like engaging in this. It's not from a healthy place. It's to run from the stuff that you need to be dealing with. And so I tell people it works until it doesn't. Everyone's not ready to like grapple with the hard things. And so that's why I say it usually starts out as a cactus, because once it's first brought up in that circle of influence, it's a cactus for everybody. Girl, them kids of yours, they just be talking out the side of their neck. Ain't no way I would let my kid talk to me like that, right? But it works until it doesn't. There is oftentimes a catalyst moment, something that changes in the course of your lived experience that brings you back to this conversation. And so I trust that it's just for a season. Something is going to happen in your lived experience where you're going to have to grapple with this in some way, shape, form, or fashion, whether it's you keep losing people because you're not good at like maintaining relationship, like whatever the thing is that forces you to have to grapple with this truth. I trust that it's coming. I trust that it's coming. And when it comes, I'll be here if you want to have a conversation about it. And if you don't,
that's okay too.
That's cool too. I'm not here to wrestle with you to change generations of a mindset that you're not interested in changing. So that letting go of the indoctrination piece, what allows that to be possible is the catalyst moment, is someone coming to a crossroads and having that awareness of this way of being is no longer sustainable. I've got to do something about it. And then they start to kind of seek information.
So an adult daughter today working on changing this narrative for herself and being the generational cycle breaker in her family, planting seeds for her parents, for her mom, maybe her grandmother, planting seeds for the women before her. It should just be that. Take away the burden of needing to see behavior change or needing to see them accept this or anything. Plant the idea, set the boundary in how you need to protect yourself and how you're showing up.
Yes, absolutely.
And then your ultimate goal, as I have said, is for the next generation to experience something different because of the work that you did. So even though you have a mom who's showing up inside of her own friend group to have these discussions, may eventually come back with like, oh, aha, you were onto something. We accept this, whatever that actually looks like. You've already removed yourself from that outcome. You're just planting the seed and setting the boundary.
Absolutely. Because if I don't remove myself from that outcome and I make myself responsible for it, it's only going to hurt our relationship, right? Like that mother wound. I want something for you more than you want it for yourself. And so earlier when we were talking about asking for help and like how people will just shut down and be like, nah, I'm good. The same thing happens when you want it for somebody more than they want it for themselves. And I think I don't want to give people the impression that this work is like fast work, because it's not. It's slow work. It's life-changing work, right?
And so just I plant a seed or I have a conversation with my mom today, that thing may not take hold and manifest to a year or two from now. Like there are still conversations that we are having that I'm like, why can't you see this? I don't know if she's going to get there, but what I have done is released myself from the responsibility of that outcome. And if you want to continue hurting in that way, you're an adult.
You're an adult, sis.
But as for me and my house, we can't rock and roll like that. And so you're going to have to take care of yourself. You're going to have to take care of your emotions. By the way, episode on being your mom's therapist.
We needed that. We needed that.
Yes. Because that's not my role in her life. I joke about her being my client. But what I'm really saying is I'm going to plant the seed from here to the rest of time because that's my mom and I care about her. But if she's not willing to listen, I'm responsible for my healing and focusing on your healing. Focusing on your capacity allows you to have energy for those hard conversations. I've had clients to me that were just like burnt out, shut down. I don't want to talk. I want to go no communication. But it had been years and years of like pouring out and having that expectation and being disappointed, right? And so the first thing that we have to talk about is how do we prioritize you? Right now, you need to prioritize you and take back some of that power, take back some of that energy, focus on what you can do for your offspring. And once you come out of this, you can decide how you want to engage or if you want to engage. But I want you to do it from a place of wellness. Not lack, scarcity, burnout, frustration.
So what kind of conversation should women be having with their friends? What is going to help be able to talk about this? How can we get groups of women actually engaging in these conversations that actually can be life-changing and provide support to break out of this narrative and actually have that community, have that support, allow the help in and be willing to ask twice. I'm working on that one. Give us some topics. Like, what can we have women start doing? What should they be talking about with their friends?
The easiest thing is like asking people what type of support they need or how can I support you?
Well, yes. So let's say somebody's listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, okay, I know me and my friends hold on to this narrative. Maybe we joke about it, or I know who the strong friend is in my group. How can they open up conversations to actually talk together about what does it mean for them to be the strong Black woman, maybe in their family or in their household? Like, what does all of this mean for them? What does it look like? And then, yes, how to actually get support. So,
yeah. I think first it starts with awareness. So a lot of times what I do see is like the joking of and the minimizing of like the things that are actually happening and hurtful. And so being intentional in those moments where we can kiki and ha ha, but I also really want to like pause. I want to take that extra second and be intentional and say, but sis, really? How are you? And maybe it's not in the context of the larger group, right? I've talked with people where they're in the group of my homegirls. Like, I can't necessarily say the thing, but there's one person who, you know, we're having side conversations. We're a little bit more close. And so if you, like, have that connection, especially, like, doing the due diligence of making sure that you double back and like ask that question. I think vulnerability is also required. When you find someone where there is a sense of safety, also sometimes you're carrying stuff. And so asking, do they have the capacity to have a deep conversation? and saying like, I trust you and I want to be vulnerable, and like normalizing that this may be a shared experience. We may both be holding some things, and I'm coming to you, one, because I trust you, but also I want to connect with you on a deeper level. Like, I am trying to cultivate something in this relationship where there's an experience of reciprocity and relief. And that takes vulnerability. I've had people say, well, you know, I was trying to like share with such and such and such and such, and they backstabbed me. Well, you don't give up on love. You don't give up on friendships. Like, you take that lesson. But again, that also comes with a level of awareness, right? Whenever we're talking about who we're connected to, how they're showing up in our lives, how they've historically shown up for us. Trust is earned. Vulnerability, that's earned. Those are not things that we just spew on people, right? There has to be some genuine connection. And sometimes like that is the work for people. Like, they continue to be in relationships where they earned. And so we need work on attachment. We need work on communication. We need to see where the breakdown is so that they can stop this cycle of getting in unhealthy relationships where they're taking advantage of. Again, self-awareness. Be the plan that you want.
Right. It starts there.
Yeah. Don't just be the person that always dumps. And ask, do you have the capacity to hold this? Do you, you know, feel like I'm a person that you can have a deep conversation with? Like, I tell people all the time, there's nothing wrong with asking for consent. Don't just call me and tell me all the things. Ask for consent. You might be on speakerphone. My kids in the back. Anything could be happening. So let's create an environment where I'm mentally okay. You're mentally okay. The research says 7 minutes, just like having a conversation for 7 minutes creates that sense of connection, but also like does something to our brain where we can like calm down, and it fosters that connection between two people. I also like listening to your body. Humans co-regulate. And so if you're with that homegirl, and every time you're with that homegirl, something is tingling in here, please listen to that.
Yeah. Or you feel tense after the experience. Yeah.
Yes. And so before we just start, I think that there are some internal things that we need to check in with. Like, is there an internal sense of safety? What is your level of self-awareness? And are you asking for consent to like have this deep emotional vulnerable conversation?
Man, I feel like we could go on for like another hour.
Yes. I love talking about this. I can talk about this all day.
Me too. Definitely me too. And even just thinking about the lens of mom to daughter and how we pass this down, one of the things that I want to like leave the listeners with is knowing that what happens in the Black community is that we want our children to be safe in the world. We want them to be safe in society. And so we pass down this idea of be strong, show up respectable, be obedient, do the right thing to get yourself unnoticed. Come home.
Come home.
But then we also create our homes to be the same place because we're trying to teach them inside the home how to be outside of the home. And now we have strong everywhere and soft nowhere. And that becomes too difficult to manage. And so the strong Black woman narrative doesn't just start as a woman. It starts as a girl. And so you've probably been carrying this for a very long time.
For a very long time. Those participant interviews were so rich. One of the questions was, where did you learn this? Like, what is your first memory
And so many of the participants said that very thing. Like, I remember being a little girl, and this is how it was reinforced. There was so much good in what you just said, because yes, home should be a safe place, a soft place, but we use it as a teaching place. And I get it, because where else are you going to teach?
Yes. Yes.
But there's no softness anywhere. And it's so cyclical, and it's difficult to break from if we're not intentional.
Yeah, that's so true.
And that's truly why I believe unlearning this narrative is the best mental health intervention for Black women, because you're learning the balance, right? You're learning how to go from doing to being. You're regulating your nervous system. You're learning to trust yourself more. And that's why I say it's like the gift that keeps on giving, because you can still pass down strength, but I also want you to pass down a regulated nervous system. I also want you to pass down what healing looks like, what being a well Black woman looks like. We can do both and.
Right.
Okay. As much as I want to continue, I'm just going to have you back on, because in my mind right now, what popped up was masking. And I'm like, and if I bring up masking, we're going to be talking for another 30 minutes. I just know it. So
I'm going to hold my mouth closed, because let's see.
Right. So I will just have you back on soon. But what do you want to leave listeners with? What do you want them to take away from this episode?
Yeah, we all have the capacity to unlearn. And it's a process. It's not about perfection. And so if something resonated, one of the most accessible ways is start reading. That's free. We were talking about everything costing.
Costing, right.
Right, like the library. Get some of these books by Black authors, by Audre Lorde. Like, start looking up what this narrative is and how it manifested and came to be, so that you can start to like understand what undoing this and unlearning this for yourself might actually look like.
And where can the listeners follow you if they find themselves struggling to maybe break free from this narrative? Or it's like, sis, okay, I hear you, but I don't even know where to begin, and I don't want this for my daughter. And maybe they like your work. Where do they find you?
Yes, drcecilymoore.com, drcecilymoore. Sign up for my newsletter, because I'm always writing blogs on this free reading resource, and you'll learn about the other resources available. Right now, I use social media for shenanigans and showing off my kid, but my work lives on my website.
Okay. Well, there you have it, guys. Thank you for listening all the way through if you've made it to the end. And that's what we have for you. So I will catch you guys in the next one.
That's all for today's episode of the Mother-Daughter Relationship Show. Thanks so much for spending this time with me. I hope you picked up some valuable insights that you can start using right away in your own relationship to create deeper connection and understanding. If something from today's episode resonated with you, don't keep it to yourself. Share it with a mother or daughter in your life who needs to hear this message. And while you're at it, please consider leaving a rating and review so we can reach more families and transform the way mothers and daughters relate to each other. For those ready to take the next step, you can visit my website to learn more about my private coaching programs and my program designed specifically for mother-daughter pairs. Whether you're dealing with communication challenges, life transitions, or just want to strengthen an already good relationship, I'm here to help. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next one.